Hello, everybody.
Mr. President, the President of the People's Republic of China.
Good to meet you.
Great pleasure to see you again.
Good to see you again.
Me too.
And we're going to have a very successful meeting, I have no doubt. But he's a very tough negotiator. That's not good. We know each other well.
Mr. President, do you plan to sign a trade deal today?
Could be. We'll have a great understanding. We have a great relationship. We've always had a great relationship.
Will you discuss Taiwan, sir?
Which way? Thank you very much, everyone.
This is my video update on this Thursday afternoon, October the 30th, coming to you from Ayia Napa, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And boy, do we have a lot of news to get to today. So before we get started, give this video a like if you want. Give it a like, subscribe to the channel. If you want, please subscribe to the channel. Helps me out a whole lot with the algorithms. And let's get moving on the news for the day. It's odd. Interesting. Very interesting. So, the Trump-Xi meeting, that is the big news for the day. The meeting wrapped up a few hours ago, and it lasted for 1.5 hours, which is not very long. That is about the same amount of time that the Trump-Putin meeting lasted in Alaska. And we all know how that turned out, right? So 1.5 hours for China and the United States to talk about trade and tariffs and according to Trump, geopolitics is really not that much time. There was also no media statement from either of the leaders, no joint press conference or anything like that. Trump did talk to the media afterwards on his own. The Chinese Foreign Ministry and the Ministry of Commerce, they also posted a readout of the results of the meeting. But all in all, I would say that if I had to judge the meeting, as far as what I've read, the statements that Trump has issued, and also going off of the body language between the two leaders, I would say that that Trump, he had to walk back a lot of the tariff and trade demands that he was making of China, and that China was in the dominant position before the meeting and during the meeting, and if you go by the readouts after the meeting as well. Before the meeting, both leaders they met on the stage on a podium on a stage, and. And Trump was made to wait for Xi Jinping, right? So Trump is waiting for Xi Jinping. Xi Jinping finally walks up to this platform, and according to protocol, Trump was to his right, which means that Xi is considered to be hosting these talks, okay? And the fact that Trump was made to wait for Xi also shows that China was in the dominant position before the talks. And it showed as well as they shook hands. Trump was talking about how Xi is a tough negotiator and he's excited about the talks. And he was saying all kinds of stuff, right? Trying to get close to Xi, trying to pat him on the back. I'll say this. If you look at Xi's body language, it was cold, man. You know, it was cold. It was icy, as Alexander described it. Very icy, right? You could tell that Xi was there to mean business. He was coming to this to talk about business. He wasn't there to play around or to exchange niceties or compliments or anything like that, even though Trump tried. But Xi was just stone cold, man, stoic. And so that was before the meeting. Then they had the meeting. An hour and a half later, they came out of the meeting. And then later on, Trump issued some statements about what they agreed on. And then China released their readout. Trump was asked by a reporter if you had to rate the talks with China on a scale of 1 to 10. What would you give it? And Trump said, I would give it a 12. A 12, because I like it. I like it a lot, so I would give it a 12. Yeah, Trump was playing the results of the meeting up big time. And we did get some agreement. Even Xi Jinping said that we have some framework to work on, right? Things were agreed and there's a way to move forward, but the United States has to be serious about these talks, right? No playing around. That was the message from Xi. We have something to discuss, something to move forward on, but you have to be a good faith actor, right? On what we've agreed on, and we need to see progress on everything we've agreed on. And then we could move towards a more substantive trade agreement. And that's really the result of these of this talk. What we really got was a 1 year pause, right? We got a 1 year pause so that China and the United States can go over various parts of this trade and tariff negotiation, and then we'll see in a year what the end result is going to be. Trump said that he's going to travel to China in April, and then that Xi would most likely come to the United States. China has not confirmed any of this. They did not confirm this statement from Trump. They did not deny it, but they did not confirm it either. Trump also said that China and the United States are going to collaborate on resolving Ukraine. No such statement in the Chinese readout at all. Nowhere do the readouts from China even mention Ukraine, even come close to mentioning any geopolitical issues. Trump admitted that they did not talk about Taiwan, which is a big reveal. If Trump believed that he really had leverage over China, right? If he actually believed that he had a strong hand to play, then he would have pressed the Taiwan issue in front of Xi. But the fact that he did not bring it up, did not discuss it at all, to me indicates that even Trump knew that he doesn't have any strong cards to play when it comes to trade and tariffs. So we're not even going to approach the issue of Taiwan. But when it comes to Ukraine, Trump said that they're going to collaborate on Ukraine. China, the Chinese readouts mentioned none of it. I imagine that probably what happened, if I had to take a guess, Trump probably brought it up in passing. You know, we need to figure out this Ukraine thing, and you know, you guys are buying Russian oil, and I imagine that China said, you know, we'll talk about it at a later date, or you already know our position when it comes to Ukraine. We've stated it many times publicly, our position when it comes to Ukraine and Russia. So let's not mess around with that during this meeting. I imagine that was the statement from China, if I had to take a guess. So basically, we have a 1 year delay, a 1 year one year of kicking the can down the road is basically the end result of this meeting. There were some things that were agreed, but we're going to have to see if the parties actually implement these terms that were agreed on. For example, Trump said that he's going to lower the tariff on fentanyl from 20% to 10% immediately. He said he's going to do that effective immediately, which is interesting because just 5 days ago, Trump was asked about the tariff on fentanyl, the 20% tariff on fentanyl, and he said that that China is smuggling fentanyl, or Venezuela's smuggling the fentanyl from China to Venezuela, and then it's making its way to the United States. So he actually said that in a statement 5 days ago, right? And that's why it has a 20% tariff. And here you have Trump saying that effective immediately, the tariff on fentanyl is going to be 10%. So his whole narrative argument about regime change in Venezuela because of Venezuela and their fentanyl smuggling to the United States from China, that whole narrative is completely fallen apart now. Anyway, he said effective immediately, 10% tariff on fentanyl. He also reduced tariffs against China from 57 or 52% to 47 or 42%, a 10% decrease across the board on various tariffs. China said they're going to buy U.S. soybeans, so they said that. They're going to talk about TikTok, NVIDIA, chips, and all of that stuff as the year moves along. No announcements there. And the rare earths. The rare earths, which China does not mention specifically in their readouts. They don't specifically say anything about rare earths. But Trump announced that China's going to put a delay on the export controls of rare earths to the United States. A one-year delay. So no rare earth export controls for 1 year as they further negotiate. In the Chinese readout, it's implied that China will ease off on the export controls for rare earths, contingent on whether the United States is actually serious about a trade deal, right? So you know, China has the United States on probation. They've put the United States on probation, or they have Trump on some sort of a rare earth subscription model, right? And we have 1 year where you'll be able to get rare earths, but after the year, your subscription ends, and it's contingent on whether you act in good faith with regards to our trade negotiations, and then maybe we'll renew your one-year subscription to our rare earths, right? It's a probation. They have Trump on a one-year probation. And they used the rare earth card, right? And that was the basic outcome of these negotiations. A very powerful card, that rare earth card. And so I would give it about two months, maybe 1 to 2 months, or I don't know, maybe 1 to 2 days. 2 days where you'll see Trump posting something on Truth Social saying that he's disappointed with Xi Jinping and that China is not honoring their trade agreement, and he is going to place 125 gazillion percent tariffs on China unless they do X, Y, and Z. I can see Trump coming out with a Truth Social post like that in a couple of days or in a couple of months, right? And I think China is kind of expecting that as well from Trump. That's why they have the United States on probation. And you can see it in the Chinese readout from the Ministry of Commerce. The way they laid out their readout, they were saying that the United States agreed to A, and so because the United States has agreed to A, then we will do this. And then the United States agreed to B. Okay, since the United States has agreed to B, we will then do this. And that's how they laid out their readout. So anyway, that is the meeting between Xi and Trump. We got 1 year of either a smooth divorce, a decoupling between the United States and China, or we got 1 year of chaos, right? Trade and tariff chaos. I'm thinking trade and tariff chaos, but let's hope that things do stabilize and we do get to a smooth divorce between the United States and China. So, do I have anything else to say about this? No, I don't. You can go to the Global Times and read the Ministry of Commerce readout from the meeting from China's side. Trump has given interviews to the media. It's all over the collective West media as far as what Trump said about the results of the meeting. And on a side note, from Reuters, Japan Prime Minister pushed back against U.S. request to ban Russian energy imports, sources say. So a day after Trump leaves from what he said was an extremely successful meeting with Japan, we get the Japanese revealing, according to Reuters, that Trump wanted them to block Russian energy imports, and they pretty much said no, right? They pretty much said no, we can't do that. So Japan pushing back on Trump's demands to block Russian oil. So the other big news for today is the testing of the Poseidon weapon, Russia's testing of the Poseidon, which I'm sure everyone knows about, the Poseidon, the underwater drone or missile that can't be stopped and carries this massive warhead that when it detonates, when it goes off, it creates this massive tsunami wave off the coast of whatever the target is, and it basically obliterates any coastal city. And of course, you're talking about water that would be contaminated with nuclear gook, right? Radioactive junk, and a very devastating weapon. More devastating, in my opinion, than the Budavestnik. Two very different weapon systems, but equally devastating. The Poseidon may even be more terrifying than the Budavestnik. The weapon was tested yesterday, and Putin announced the successful testing of the Poseidon. According to Putin, there is no way of intercepting the Poseidon unmanned vehicle. This is what Putin said. When it comes to speed and depth, there is nothing comparable to the unmanned vehicle anywhere in the world, and it is unlikely to appear anytime soon, he stated. At the moment, there are no methods of intercepting the Poseidon, Putin stressed. The geography advantage of the United States has been completely nullified with the Budavestnik and the Poseidon. And these are terrifying, horrific weapons, right? But any advantage that the United States, that the neocons thought they had over Russia or over China, let them fight over there. Let's get proxy wars going. Let's get conflicts happening in Europe or in Asia. We're far away and we're protected by these two oceans. That's over. That has been completely nullified, negated by the Budavestnik and the Poseidon. And I believe the Poseidon, like the Budavestnik, can go for multiple hours or even multiple days, just underwater moving around, right? Which is terrifying when you think of it, especially with the huge warhead that it carries. But this obviously freaked out Trump in a big, big way, and he panicked, man. He panicked big time. And he posted his panic. He showed his panic with a post on Truth Social. And this is what Trump said. The United States has more nuclear weapons than any other country. That's not true. This was accomplished, including a complete update and renovation of existing weapons during my first term in office. Because of the tremendous destructive power, I hated to do it, but had no choice. Russia is second and China is a distant third, but will be even within 5 years. Because of other countries' testing programs, I have instructed the Department of War to start testing our nuclear weapons on an equal basis. That process will begin immediately. Thank you for your attention to this matter, President Donald J. Trump. Not a very coherent post on Truth Social now that I read it again out loud. But anyway, I think you get the gist of what Trump is saying here. He was also asked by the media about U.S. Nuclear testing, and Trump said, you know, everyone else is doing it, or the other big powers are doing nuclear testing, so why not us? We should do it as well, which is completely wrong, completely false. Does Trump believe that the Budavestnik or the Poseidon were nuclear tests? If that's what he believes, then he's very, very ill-advised, very mistaken, because those were not nuclear tests. And this is a huge deal for Trump to announce that the United States is now going to be conducting nuclear tests. It violates the nuclear moratorium. And what this is going to do is this is going to lead to a nuclear arms race, right? If the United States starts conducting nuclear tests, well, then Russia's going to start conducting them in China. And you can see how all of this spirals out of control. Let me read you what Peskov said about this. When asked about the issue by journalists later in the day, Peskov noted the statement by Putin, which has been repeated many times, that of course, if someone abandons the moratorium on nuclear testing, then Russia will act accordingly. The U.S. is a sovereign country and has every right to make sovereign decisions, he stressed. Responding to Trump's claims of other countries carrying out nuclear tests, Peskov said, "We are so far not aware of this. If it is about the Budavestnik, then it is not a nuclear test," he insisted. "All nations are developing their defense systems, but this is not a nuclear test." So no one else is carrying out nuclear tests. No one. The United States is not the number one nuclear power. That's also false. But this is not the first time that Trump has repeated this lie. I'm starting to believe that Trump believes that the United States is the number one nuclear power. That's not true. But you can see the response from Peskov, from the Kremlin. You can see it. He's basically saying, look, if the United States wants to do this and they're a sovereign country, if they want to do this, they can do this. Well, we're gonna do it as well, right? And just to respond to Trump's statement about other countries conducting nuclear tests, not true. The Budavestnik was not a nuclear test. Very dangerous statement from Trump, a very panicky statement from Trump, a revelation that Trump is freaked out by the weapon systems that Russia has unveiled. And he is now basically, through a Truth Social post, he's basically telling the Pentagon to start nuclear testing. What kind of a world do we live in where the President of the United States, via social media, tells the Pentagon to start conducting nuclear tests? What a freaking crazy clown world we live in, because for some weird reason, Trump is just not understanding what the Budavestnik test was. He's not understanding the Poseidon test. He doesn't grasp the fact, the reality that the United States is not the number one nuclear power. He's not getting any of this, which is very, very bizarre and very scary. So bizarre and scary, since we're on the topic of bizarre and scary, how about what the Belgium defense minister said in an interview yesterday. How about what he said? So the Belgium defense minister, he was asked about what if Russia launches a nuclear missile or a non-nuclear? What if they launch a missile into Belgium or into any NATO capital, any EU NATO capital? What then? And the defense minister of Belgium said that Moscow would be leveled if that happened. If that happened, he said Moscow would be leveled. He said that F-16s or F-whatever, right? F-whatever, hundreds of fighter jets, of NATO fighter jets, would deploy over the skies of Moscow. He said that Russia would not even see it coming because all of these fighter jets are stealth, and Russia would not be able to find any of them, and there would be hundreds of them. And he said that Moscow would be completely leveled. That is what the Belgium prime minister said. Moscow will be wiped off the map. Defense minister from NATO nation does not fear Putin's threats. The Belgium defense minister. That is what he said in an interview. And the part of the interview that not many people are discussing, a lot of people are focusing on his statement where he said that that Moscow would be wiped off the map and leveled by NATO, by Belgium. Okay, not by Belgium, by NATO. Everyone's focusing on that statement. But the defense minister of Belgium, he said something very interesting during this interview. He said that when he was asked about the Tomahawks, he said not to worry about Russia's reply if we start launching long-range missile strikes deep into Russia, including Tomahawk missile strikes into Russia. He said we shouldn't worry about Putin's red lines. We should not take Putin's red lines seriously, he said. Putin has issued red lines in the past, and he did nothing about it when we crossed those red lines. He said that NATO entry of Finland and Sweden was a red line that was crossed, and Putin did nothing. That's not true. Finland and Sweden in NATO was never a Russian red line. Ukraine in NATO, that was a Russian red line. But Finland and Sweden was never a Russian red line. But anyway, he said that was a red line in his imagination that was crossed, and Putin did nothing. And then he talked about long-range missile strikes into Russia, the attack-ums and all of these things. And that was a red line. The response from Russia was the Oreshnik, but that was it. And he said they crossed those red lines and nothing really happened. So he basically said, you know what? Don't worry about it. Let's launch those Tomahawk missiles into Russia. Let's launch Taurus and other missiles deep into Russia. And let's call Putin's bluff, is basically what he said. And not many people are talking about that part of the interview. So that was an interesting statement from the defense minister of Belgium. Something tells me that this time around, if they do launch those Tomahawks and long-range missiles into Russia, something tells me that that Putin will react to the crossing of that red line. I don't think there's any choice to it. Putin, Russia, the Kremlin is going to have to retaliate and react to the crossing of that red line. But what Belgium is trying to do here is that they're trying to shift the conversation away from the seizing of the Russian assets, away from Euroclear, because Belgium is putting a stop to the seizing of the Russian assets, because the EU is telling Belgium that they don't want to take up any risk, or at least the EU member states are saying, look, let's take these Russian assets, but all the risk is with you, Belgium, and with you, Euroclear. And Belgium told EU member states, you know what, if you guys want to take these assets, which are in Belgium, with Euroclear, then we have to share the risk, right? And the EU is telling Belgium, nah, we don't really want to share the risk. All the risk is on you. And so Belgium is saying, well, we don't want you then to take the assets, because if you take the assets, our economy is going to implode. Euroclear is going to be buried in lawsuits, and that will probably close. And all the risk is on us. So what Belgium is now saying is they're trying to shift the focus of the conversation when it comes to Project Ukraine. They're trying to shift it back to the Tomahawks and long-range missile strikes into Russia, which is even more crazy and more dangerous, right? But anyway, that is what Belgium's game is here. So that was big news as well, what the defense minister of Belgium said. And even more big news coming from the president of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin. He has invited journalists to see the encirclement, the cauldrons in Pokrovsk and Kupiansk, because Zelensky and collective West media, they're doubting that there's any type of encirclement in Pokrovsk and Kupiansk. And they're talking about a difficult situation. Zelensky's saying it's a difficult situation, but it's not as catastrophic as Russia is making it out to be. We're going to break through. We'll punch a hole in the Russian military in these areas, and we'll break into Pokrovsk and push the Russians out. They have admitted that the Russian military is operating in the city center, but Zelensky's saying, look, we'll send reinforcements. We'll work our way into Pokrovsk, into the center, and we'll push Russia out. Putin is saying, look, these guys are trapped, man. You don't believe me? You think that Zelensky is telling you the truth? And he's saying that they're going to be able to fix the situation in Pokrovsk and Kupiansk. I'm telling you that these guys are encircled. And if you don't believe me, well, what we'll do is that we will put a pause in fighting for 24 hours. I believe he said 24 hours. We'll stop our operations for 24 hours, and we will allow media, Russian, international, American, European, they can come into Pokrovsk. They can go into Kupiansk, and they can see for themselves that what's going on here is an encirclement. You have about 5,000 Ukrainian soldiers in one area. You have 5,000 in the other cauldron. If they don't surrender, they're going to be annihilated. There's no way for them to get out. All the efforts of Zelensky, of Sirsky, of Budanov to try and bust them out is failing. But come in, journalists, and see for yourselves, and you can report from inside Pokrovsk and see the situation as it is, instead of believing what the clown puppet comedian is saying. So that is what Putin said, which is a very, very smart move from Putin, right? A very, very smart move. Because for Zelensky, it's all about media and optics, right? The last thing he wants to have happen is the media reporting on the catastrophic encirclement that has unfolded in Pokrovsk and in Kupiansk. He does not want that to get out, because the collective West, the citizens of the collective West, or many of the citizens of the collective West, the Trump administration, European leaders, they're running around with this narrative that that Ukraine is winning, and yeah, things are tough in Pokrovsk, but they're not as catastrophic as Putin is making them out to be, right? So let's keep on supporting Zelensky and give him more money and more weapons and long-range missiles, because Ukraine is winning. He does not want to see that narrative crumble with collective West journalists in Pokrovsk reporting that the situation is beyond bad for the Ukraine military. 10,000 Ukrainian troops encircled is significant. It is significant. And the fact that Zelensky is not telling them to surrender is horrific. Absolutely horrific. Zelensky and Sirsky, they should be ordering those soldiers to surrender. And Putin said if they surrender, Geneva Convention, prisoners of war, but they have to lay down their arms and surrender. Instead, Zelensky is trying to figure out a way to bust them out. He's telling the media that things are not that bad. Yeah, they're bad, but they're not that bad, is what he's saying. And well, Putin has just done a checkmate move. Come on in and see what's going on for yourselves in Pokrovsk, and you will realize that the Green Goblin is lying. Anyway, enough of that. That is what Putin said. And we had the Russian military. They were They were striking Ukraine earlier today, the energy facilities. So as you have these encirclements in the key area of Pokrovsk and in Kupiansk, you also have the Russian military continuing to knock out Ukraine's energy infrastructure. And they hit the energy infrastructure again this morning. And Ukraine air defenses, nowhere to be seen. Basically, the Russian military with their drones and their missiles, they can hit pretty much any target that they want inside of Ukraine. So that happened as well. And how about an update? This is an interesting update on the refinery that was sabotaged in Hungary. Remember that story where there was an attack on a refinery in Romania connected to refining Russian oil. Actually, the Romania refinery was connected to Lukoil, and then you had the MOL refinery that was attacked in Hungary about an hour after Romania's refinery was attacked. And the thinking was that this was some sort of Ukraine sabotage on these refineries. I mean, 1 hour apart, and both these refineries have explosions and they're catching fire. Well, Orban, he has actually issued a statement saying that the attack on the MOL refinery could have been an external attack. That is what he said. The Hungarian Prime Minister has said he hoped the incident had nothing to do with Polish calls to target Budapest's energy sources. Yeah, and Poland was happy about this, right? Poland was happy about the sabotage of Nord Stream. Donald Tusk and Sikorsky posted about how happy they were about the sabotage of Nord Stream and the fact that one of the suspected Nord Stream bombers was let go by a Polish court, and they cheered that on. And then they talked about how it's okay to attack infrastructure. Oh, look at that lizard. Oh man, I lost him. There are so many lizards around here. It's awesome. It is awesome. So it's okay to go after infrastructure as long as it's in a war and you're defending yourself. You can blow up whatever infrastructure you want, said Tusk and Sikorsky. And then you had these refineries blown up in Hungary. And now you have Orban coming out publicly and saying, you know what? The attack on the refinery in Hungary might have been an external attack, which means that when Orban is saying this, which means, yes, it was an external attack for Orban to say this. And then Orban says, I hope it wasn't Poland that encouraged this. An amazing statement from Orban. And you know who hasn't spoken up about the attack on this refinery? Orban's buddy, U.S. President Trump. He hasn't said one thing about the refinery attack. At least I don't think he said anything. And man, Orban, he really supported Trump, and he continues to support Trump, right? Supported Trump when he was campaigning, continues to be Trump's number one supporter in Europe. And when an oil refinery is attacked in Budapest, and it looks like sabotage, Trump says nothing. Trump does nothing. He says nothing. Anyway, an incredible statement from Orban. And we can now talk about another big news topic for today, which was the elections in the Netherlands. That's right. We have the tentative results of the elections in Netherlands, because these were close elections. But the Geert Wilders PVV looks like they'll be in second place or maybe even third place when the results of the elections are confirmed. It looks like the winner is the D66 party. That's how it looks, but it's still very, very close. But we may be getting a very young prime minister from D66, Rob Jentin, for the Netherlands. Rob Jentin, very young guy. And he is super pro-EU, also pro-Palestine and anti-Israel. And a lot of analysts, I believe correctly, are noting that the one issue that might have sunk Geert Wilders in this election was his support of Netanyahu. That might have done Geert Wilders in, and that might have done his party in during these elections, and that might have propelled the D66 to come out on top and appoint their prime minister. Robert Barnes actually posted on X, one sec. Here we go. What stood out for the surprise winner of the Dutch elections? Their opposition to Israel. I think that's spot on, man. I think that might have made the difference in these elections. You know, Geert Wilders positions himself as right or nationalist far right, but he may have been more of a Maloney type than an actual nationalist or patriot of the Netherlands. I don't know. That's just my guess, my assessment. So in comes the D66, which is very liberal left, I believe. Globalist. I would say they're more globalist left. And they're very, very loyal, very committed to the European Union as well. Very committed to the EU. And they're very anti-Russian and very anti-Putin, right? Here's a quote that I will read you from the possible new prime minister of the Netherlands. I want the return of the Netherlands to the role of kingmaker in Europe, Jetten said. We used to play that role, and when we did, it was for the better, he added. Europe must transform itself into a serious democratic global power, Jetten continued. That means giving the EU the power and the resources to do what citizens all across Europe are asking it to do, defend our territory against Putin's aggression, grow the economy, protect the climate. So Ursula's probably celebrating, right? Ursula and Kaja Kallas. They're not, I imagine they're not. I see you. Where are you? Where are you, man? You guys are fast and you blend in. I imagine they're not happy with Jetten and the D66's stance on Israel because Ursula and Kaja Kallas support Netanyahu. But they are happy about their stance on Putin and the militarization of the EU and all of that. So anyway, that's the situation in the Netherlands. I hope I got it right. I hope I summarized the situation well in the Netherlands. I don't think we have the final results of the elections, but the indication is this Jetten guy and D66 being the party that will take a shot at forming a government, snap elections in the Netherlands. And the news continues with Bill Gates and U.S. President Trump taking a victory lap with Bill Gates and climate change, because Bill Gates, he posted an article, I believe, on one of his foundation websites or something like that. But anyway, Bill Gates, he said that the climate crisis won't lead to humanity's demise. And what we need to focus on now is improving people's lives, right? Making the lives of people better over the long term, right? You will own nothing and be happy. Eat them bugs. You will be happy eating them bugs and eating the beyond meat, the artificial meat or whatever it's called. We're going to improve your lives and make you happy, according to Bill Gates. And the whole climate thing is really not that big of a deal. And Trump is claiming victory on this statement from Bill Gates. He says, I, We just won the war on the climate change hoax. Bill Gates has finally admitted that he was completely wrong on the issue. It took courage to do so, and for that, we are all grateful. MAGA. I don't know if this is Trump's victory lap, if he should claim victory for this post by Bill Gates. I'll tell you what's going on here. This is what I think is going on. I think that Bill Gates is saying, you know what, AI, man, AI needs a lot of energy, so we got to move away from this whole climate change stuff, and we got to think about AI, which consumes a whole lot of energy, and that's what I'm going to focus on, right? Microsoft, OpenAI, 27% stake in OpenAI, $137 billion in AI, Microsoft, Bill Gates, Microsoft, right? That's what I think is going on, man. Forget climate change was pocket. Climate change was pocket change is what Bill Gates is saying. This AI stuff, yeah, we gotta think about AI now. That's what's going on here, in my opinion, right? Anyway, of which Trump is also a big fan of AI as well. So Trump and Gates are aligned now, right? They're aligned going forward. They're aligned in improving our lives. I like it. I like that, Bill Gates. I like him a lot. Anyway, all right, let's do some clown worlds and we will wrap this video up. I imagine this has been a long, yeah, I knew this was going to be a long, long video. I knew it. There was so much news to get to today. Anyway, let's try to get through these clown worlds quickly. In Lithuania, They are saying that Belarus is attacking them with balloons, with balloons carrying cigarettes, and they're saying that this is an attack from the KGB, according to Lithuania's president. Now, Seda claimed during a government meeting on Tuesday that the incursions were not just smuggling attempts, but a hybrid attack against Lithuania. We have a lot of evidence, both direct and indirect, that it is a deliberate act aimed at destabilizing the situation, he said, as cited by media outlet Delphi. Right, so Belarus is trying to destabilize Lithuania by sending over balloons filled with cigarettes. And this is a KGB Soviet-Belarus hybrid attack on Lithuania, right? Cigarettes in balloons. Just shoot down the balloons, man. I don't know. Shoot them down. Scramble an F-16, like with the decoy drones over Poland, right? Get some F-16s scrambled. Fire some missiles at these balloons. Problem solved. And NATO ends up looking good, right? You can make it into a big NATO operation. Isn't that what all these guys like? They like these NATO operations against these aggressive Russian hybrid attack balloons. And when you blow up the balloon, you also get a prize, right? Like a piñata, you get a prize, cigarettes. So after you blow up the balloon, you can smoke. Crazy, man. Crazy. I think Lithuania is desperate for attention. They're feeling ignored. Estonia gets most of the attention in the Baltics. Anyway, let's move on. One more clown world. Trump, he was speaking about Modi right before his meeting with Xi Jinping, and he mocked the leader of India. He mocked the leader of India, Prime Minister Modi. He said, "He's the nicest looking guy. He looks like your father, but he's a killer. He's tough as hell." That is what President Trump said. And then he revealed that seven planes were shot down in the conflict with Pakistan. Seven Indian planes were shot down. And he said that this was going to be a big war and that he prevented this big war. And they're both nuclear powers. And he stopped this from getting out of control and becoming a big nuclear war between Pakistan and India. He pretended to be Modi, right? So he mocked Modi. He was trying to do an impersonation of Modi. That's not going to go down well. And And then he talked about the seven planes being shot down. Modi's not going to like that either, man. Modi is going to be furious with Trump saying that. Furious. But there it is. There it is. So that's the last clown world for today. I will end the video there. The Duran.locals.com. We're on X, we're on Rumble, we're on Telegram, and we are also on Substack. All the links are in the description box down below. This may be my longest video in all of history. Maybe. We'll see. Take care, everyone.